Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. KY's Whitehead, here again to have another conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. While we're waiting to speak with the attorney around the Anton Black case, I just wanted to get your opinion this hour about the steps that are being taken right now to deal with the voter suppression that is happening in Georgia, and that there's a chance that this voter suppression is going to begin to make its way across the South. I think it's interesting because as restrictive voting bills begin to multiply, the grand old party, the GOP, signals that it won't bow to corporate pressure. In other words, we don't care if we lose money. We're not going to give. It's the backlash that's taking place right now to Georgia's restrictive voting law. It has intensified with big corporations like Delta and Coca-Cola criticizing the law. Why? Because we were ready to boycott Delta and Coca-Cola, right? And Major League Baseball announcing it was moving the All-Star Game out of Atlanta. The politics of threats and counter-threats have become so fierce that it's difficult to determine whether the corporate moves were having their intended effect. I want to talk about that this hour. I want to talk about using the power of our dollar to change this country. Let me do that right after I speak very quickly to get an update on what is happening with the Anton Black case with Kenneth Ravenal, a trial attorney with over 25 years of experience. They call him a powerhouse trial attorney, and he is working now in the case involving Anton Black. Mr. Ravenal, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Dr. Kate. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate having you on. Could you speak with us a little bit? Because we covered this case from the very beginning with Taya Graham and Stephen Janis on the show quite a while ago. Anton Black, expecting father, aspiring model and actor, former champion athlete, 19 years old. Many are calling this our situation involving what it means to have an unarmed Black person killed by the police. Can you speak a little bit about it and give us some background on the case?
Sure, I'll be happy to, Dr. Kate. This case, as you haven't mentioned yet, and I'm sure you did in the past, is eerily similar to the George Floyd case, having occurred even before what happened with Mr. Floyd. On September the 15th of 2018, Anton was having a mental health crisis. He'd been diagnosed with being bipolar. He was chased by police officers, three police officers, and including a civilian that they brought in to help them chase Anton, who was a motorcyclist who was wearing a Confederate motorcycle helmet. They chased Anton to his home. He locked himself in a car. He was afraid. The police busted the window out with a baton, tased him, dragged him out, got into a scuffle with him, pinned him down, and then held him down, very similar to George Floyd. And for about 6 minutes or so, while Anton originally struggled, and then Anton just became quiet. And he died from a positional asphyxiation. And so the case is so much like the George Floyd case. We got involved in the case, and in December of last year, we filed a lawsuit on behalf of the family against those police officers. Well, we did something else, Dr. K. We also added, probably for the first time, we also brought part of that lawsuit an action against the medical examiners who have covered up for too long what the police officers do. You've seen it happen in the George Floyd case. Well, it happened here as well. Instead of admitting that Anton died because he was held down and he was not able to breathe, and that's what killed him, the MEs here, the medical examiners here, suggested that Anton died of certain other things. And it's one of the things was bipolar disorder. Now, many of us know generally what bipolar disorder is, but it's a psychiatric illness. It doesn't kill you. So it was that kind of thing that the medical examiners, instead of just acknowledging that a young man that had 43 blunt trauma injuries on his body died of positional asphyxiation because he couldn't breathe when the video, a body-worn camera video, showed the police officer, a 300-pound police officer lying on his back as he was held prone on his chest, and two other officers assisted. They raised his leg and like he was being hogtied. And instead of just admitting what happened, they chose to say what killed him was not the police action. The medical examiner's report, his autopsy report, after months the family fought to get it, and only after Governor Hogan came out and made a statement did the medical examiners finally release it, because they wanted to hide it. And then the state's attorney on the Eastern Shore down there then decided that he was going to use that same medical examiner's report and as a basis for saying Anton's death was an accident, or Anton's death was natural causes, and it didn't even impanel a grand jury. And Dr. K, you should now know that the same medical examiner, the chief medical examiner of the state of Maryland, is now a witness for Derek Chauvin in the Floyd case. So he's now exported that same kind of bad medicine, blaming the victims for their own death, and now he's going to be an expert witness for Chauvin in the George Floyd case, trying to get Mr. Chauvin off in his charges. It's very scary what's going on.
Well, now, one of the things I noticed when I was just reading this story about how eerily similar it is, is what they start, the tale they begin to spin about him, that he was exhibiting superhuman strength.
Right.
He had drugs running through his system, that they took so many people because they weren't unable to restrain him, which is the same thing that's being said about George Floyd now.
And you know what's interesting is that they made that story up soon as they realized that they had killed the young man, that he was unresponsive and they couldn't resuscitate him after letting him 6 minutes of holding down, 4 minutes after they finally turned him over. And they turned him over and they said, let's turn him over so that he can breathe. Well, it's a little late when you've held him down for 6 minutes and he's not moving. And then they started concocting these stories that he had drugs in his system. And guess what? The toxicology report that they hid for months when we finally got it shows there was no drugs in his system at all. At all. So the medical examiner, instead of just acknowledging that there were no drugs there, wrote in the report that maybe he was on drugs. But they got their toxicology report, two of them, and each toxicology report showed that Anton did not have drugs in his system. So it tells you that, you know, and that's why we've alleged that this is a conspiracy.
Right.
It is a cover-up. It is an attempt by these medical examiners, you know, to protect the police. Not only is it bad enough to have the police kill a young black man, 19 years old, for nothing, but then to cover it up is really scary.
Can I just to speak with you about a bigger issue, folks, and we're talking to the attorney who's handling the case, Justice for Anton Black, which is, you know, the details in this case similar to what happened with George Floyd. And we're talking about George Floyd now because we're in the midst of the trial for the officer who is accused of killing him by asphyxiation with his knee on his neck. I think this is part of a bigger story. Can you talk a little bit about the bigger story that we have been wrestling with for years now around police brutality and around the killing of unarmed black people where very few police officers are held accountable for it?
Yeah. Yeah, right now there is, as you probably have discussed on your show, that before in the General Assembly now is something called Anton Black's Law. And what that is aiming to do is to try to address some of the problems with, you know, the police Bill of Rights. As you all know, that the Bill of Rights, police Bill of Rights, first one was in Maryland, and many states adopted these Bill of Rights where it protects the police officers. You can't even really investigate them. There are no civilians on these panels. So these officers are protecting officers. But one of the biggest problems that we have encountered over the years in trying to bring police officers to justice outside of the criminal arena and in the civil arena is this qualified immunity. You know, that is what the Supreme Court years ago hurt so many black and brown people by coming up with this theory of qualified immunity. Look, the Constitution says that we are all to be free from police abuses, from excessive force, And the Constitution is clear. The Supreme Court came up with this qualified immunity, which allows the police officers to have immunity if they can somehow make two arguments. One is that their actions didn't violate one's rights, but the bigger problem is something called showing that there is clearly established law. Kind of like if you don't have a case that meets your exact facts, you can't win. Of course, the law doesn't go that far, but that's kind of how it has played out over the years. So one of the things that is going to be very important is to see how Congress reacts. And after all of what we've gone through over the summer with all of the protests, you know, the rightful protests in the streets, trying to draw attention to what happened to George Floyd and others, is whether we can somehow get rid of this qualified immunity argument that allows police officers to say, well, you can't point to a case just like this one. So even though we killed your son, your daughter, your husband, you can't win. You can't get anything from us. You can't get any dollars for your son's life because we didn't have a case that told us that it was a violation of one's right. And so until we get rid of qualified immunity, it's going to always be very difficult, you know, for us to win these cases. You know, we were able to win. You're familiar with the Corrin Gaines case, and I represented Corrin Gaines' five-year-old son,
yes.
Cody Gaines, in that matter.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, he did win, but they chose not to give him the money?
Well, yeah, a little update on that. So we won for Cody. The entire verdict was about $38 million. For Cody, it was about $32.8 million. And after winning that and having the jury return the verdict in our favor, about a year later, the judge, after sitting on the matter for a year, threw out the entire award and found in favor of the police. We did not stop there. We then appealed the case to the Court of Special Appeals of Maryland. And in last July, the court found that we were right, that the judge was absolutely wrong for throwing out the verdict and reinstated the entire verdict. So it's all been reinstated.
Okay, good. I'm so glad to hear that. And so now I would like to ask you, I know that lawyers are loath to do this, but I want to ask you before I wrap up here, to give us a sense from your perspective as a lawyer involved with a case like this, give us a sense of what's happening with the Derek Chauvin trial. Like, you know, is he going to go to jail? Is he going to be held accountable? Knowing, of course, that police officers going to individual police officers, it doesn't solve the problem of police brutality. But in this case, justice is being called for across the globe.
Yeah. Yes, I am. I will tell you that because we've been so tied up, we have some pleadings that have to be filed tonight in Anton Black's case, and we've been working on that for the last several weeks. I cannot say that I'm fully versed in all that has happened in the trial. I did speak with a prosecutor from the Chauvin case a little while ago who called us and asked for some information. I won't go any further than that. But so like we know that you know, what we have seen, the question is going to be, in many respects, what happens, what the medical examiner's findings were.
Mm-hmm.
They know that they have to deal with that particular issue because, look, here they want to argue and have been argued that George Floyd died not of the knee on his neck, as we all witnessed, but that he had drugs in his system, that he had a heart condition. Of course, none of those things killed him at the moment, right?
Right.
You know, they want us to ignore what's in front of us. I think the things that I have seen that the prosecutors have done a very good job of putting witnesses on who were there on the street, on the ground, and the people who worked with Chauvin, the police officers, to tell a very good story of what actually occurred. But I must tell you, having tried cases for almost 40 years, you never know what a jury is going to do. And we can hope and pray here that this jury is going to do the right thing, which is look at the evidence, the clear evidence that was in front of them of what killed this man. I don't think any of us who is not on the jury really have a lot of doubt about what killed George Floyd.
I think it's so interesting because I remember seeing the footage way back of Rodney King. And it was back then I realized, okay, what I'm seeing here apparently isn't exactly what the juries are seeing. Because you get a different
eyes,
result.
Right? Yeah. Don't believe our eyes.
Yeah.
And that's what they want us to do in the Floyd case. Don't believe what you're really seeing.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, the old Wizard of Oz, you know, don't pay attention to that man behind the curtain.
Right.
Well, you know, the man behind the curtain was there. And here, what is very obvious to us and should be obvious to those who are trying the case and the jury, hopefully, is that what killed this man was the knee on his neck for 9 minutes plus.
Mm. And that's what, of course, we're dealing with the Anton Black. Next steps for that case so we can keep our eyes on it?
Yeah, we're filing motions tonight. As suspected and believed, the police officers in this case have filed a motion for the court to dismiss the case, arguing qualified immunity. We are filing a response to that tonight. By 12 tonight, it'll be filed, and we fully expect that we're going to be successful, as we were in the Gaines case, to get a judge to ignore those erroneous arguments. And hopefully this time, when we get the verdict, the judge won't, and I don't believe this judge will do that, will, you know, try to help the police out. So we think that, you know, by the end of the summer, we'll have a good feel on where we are with the case, and hopefully, if we can't resolve it, it will be a trial by next year.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on.
Great. Take care.
So, folks, we have that on the table, and we're going to keep our eye on the Anton Black, the case for justice for Anton Black, a case that happened here in Maryland, which is eerily similar to the case that we're dealing with now, which is the death of George Floyd, the murder of George Floyd, and the fight to get justice for his family. We understand, having spoken to attorneys more often than not on this show, getting their opinion, that individual police officers going to jail does not end the problem of police brutality. We got that. But we want to see justice prevail. I want to turn our attention now and open up the phone lines to you to get your opinion about what you think is happening with the pressure to change these restrictive voting bills that are coming up and that are making their way across the South. Texas is going to be the new place for the showdown. So the Democrats are fighting, of course, to protect access to the vote. And the Republicans are working now to set up a system of voter suppression. Like we've talked about the implications of this, and I want to kind of go through it. We understand that by the year 2040 or so, that whites are going to be in the minority. They're no longer going to be the majority in this country for the first time in the history of this country. Whites will not be in the majority. I think that's important to note, that the biggest group, the largest group, the majority at that time will be Hispanics by 2040. That the population of whites, it is drastically going down, decreasing. They're expecting that black folks will remain flat. In other words, we're roughly about 13.1% to 14% of the population today. And they're predicting by 2040 that we're going to be about 13.1 to 14% of the population. We're going to remain flat. But that what we're watching and what I believe is happening and what I'd like to hear from you is I believe that the Republicans are in the midst of setting up an apartheid system. That is what I'm saying. And so I know that's a huge statement to make. I'm putting it out there. Because what's apartheid? Well, you set up this minority rule. I mean, that's what apartheid is. It's just something that we're going to have to think about. We're going to have to take into account that what we see here, what is taking place here, is an apartheid-like situation. Because when you take a close look at what is happening in this country and you're watching as the Republicans are setting it up to keep power situated in the hands of just a few, that's what minority rule looks like. I mean, you think about the fact that in the Senate, it's split, you know, 48 Dems, two independents who rule with the Dems, 50 Republicans, but that the Republicans actually speak for far fewer people than the Democratic Party. That when you talk about moving this country forward, when you talk about what it looks like to move this country forward, then you are talking about the Democratic Party. That's what you're talking about. When you're talking about power being centralized in the hands of just a few, when you talk about people that are making laws that will only benefit a few people, when you talk about a Republican Party that is so concentrated and so fixated on keeping power situated in the hands of just a few, it should concern you. Setting up an apartheid system. I mean, that's, and I think it's because we're seeing the last gasp of this racist dragon. You're not going to be the majority by 2040. Okay, we'll rule through the courts. Rule, I mean, just think about that. We will rule through the courts. That's why Joe Biden, if you're paying attention, is moving so fast to put in new judges right now. He has 11. I mean, dude is rolling. Out of the 11, 9 are women, 4 are black women. Like, he'll have the first Muslim American to sit as a judge. I mean, he is moving. Why? Because it is that branch of government, the judicial branch of government, that interprets the law. They determine whether a law is constitutional or not. They determine when young brothers come up before them whether they're going to serve 10 years for a crime or 18 months. They determine whether you're going to get life or you're going to be out in 25. Having judges, which is what is interesting, because that's what Donald Trump focused on. While we were looking at his tweets and his jokes and, you know, Covfefe and all this madness, he was busy pushing through more judges than any other president in modern history, first or second, or one or two term president, that he put forth more judges. Think about it. And judges who come on the bench who are in their 40s, right-wing conservative white men who are going to serve for at least 40 years, which means they're going to implement policies that will shape this country for the next 100 years. Can we fight them economically while they are fighting us in the courts? We can talk about that when we return. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay with us. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. The MLB, if you follow Major League Baseball, they are announcing and they made the decision to move the All-Star game out of Atlanta because Georgia right now is ground zero for voter suppression. Georgia is where our fight is. Georgia is where we need to make sure that Sister Stacey Abrams becomes the first governor, first black woman to be governor of this here good old United States of America. It's about economic consequences if they continue to pursue restrictive voting legislation. But the Republicans have not blinked an eye. They are not backing down. In fact, the way it stands right now is that the Democrats don't have enough votes in the United States Senate to pass legislation like the For the People Act. The For the People Act would override many of the restrictive provisions in the new Georgia laws. They don't have enough votes to do it. Let's be very clear. GOP controls state legislators around the country. It is not yet clear whether the backlash to the Georgia law, which is known as the Election Integrity Act of 2021, will actually be any kind of deterrent. Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar said, look, boycotts have the power to change the course of history, even if there is a painful outcome in the short term. So the civil rights movement, we boycotted Montgomery. 360-something days later, you saw the impact. South Africa, we had to boycott companies that had not divested from apartheid South Africa. And years later, we saw the impact. Boycotts do eventually change laws. But the road we're on right now, I want black folks and Native indigenous folks and Hispanic folks, I want you to hear me well when I tell you, restricting our access to the ballot is paramount to taking us out of the equation. It is what they're doing. They are removing us, paramount to taking us out of the equation. That's exactly what they are doing. They are rendering us almost helpless. They're trying to cut us off at the knees. They're working to create a democracy that isn't fully functioning for all of us. We will not be a democracy if all the decisions are only in the hands of a few. Think about how serious this issue is and how we're now at a crisis point. Your comments, your questions, your concerns about what is happening in Georgia and how they're on their way now to Texas. They're going to start running these restrictive voting laws state by state. And if we don't do something soon, we're going to find ourselves outside of the room where it happens. 410-319-8888. Clarence is on the phone from Baltimore. Clarence, how are you?
Hey, Dr. K, thanks for taking this call.
But, absolutely.
You know, I just want to say this, Dr. K. There's an undercurrent that to this that you have to take very serious. As a matter of fact, in my opinion, you take this more serious than anything else. What that governor of Georgia said was you could have tied what his reaction and what he said on camera to the end of what Donald Trump said when he incited the insurrection. He said, they're coming for you. They're coming for your business. They're coming for your jobs. They're coming for your salary. That's insightful. That's inflammatory. He's telling these people to take up arms. That's what he's telling those nuts down there. That you can't read. I cannot read in this current climate that speech that he made as anything else but a call to violence. Period. They're coming for you. They're coming for your businesses. They're coming for your jobs and your salary. Simple as that, Dr. K. So, you know, that's the undercurrent that, you know, cannot be ignored. Thanks, Doc.
I like what you're saying. It's the undercurrent that cannot be ignored. I just want to push and say that it feels like right now we are under attack. We are. And the attacks are coming from every side. We have what's happening with Derek Chauvin. I'm sorry, that is triggering. It is hard watching Black folks breaking down, weeping and wailing as they are talking about bearing witness to a Black man being killed before him. The testimony of the young sister who videotaped this murder and the fact that she said she has sat in her room on multiple occasions, begging, praying, and asking George Floyd for forgiveness, that she did not do more to save his life. She said, I had to recognize and realize that it's not what I didn't do. It's what they did do. Watching Black folks in pain, recounting what it was like. It's triggering. The Anton Black case is triggering. This teenager who was killed right in front of his mom. She said he was looking up at her, struggling. He said, I love you. His girlfriend, who was pregnant with his child, showed up, and none of them could do anything because the cops can stop you from stepping in to save a person's life. I want us to just sit with that for a moment. It's triggering. It's triggering right now watching what is happening throughout the South as they are working to turn us into South Africa. Now, you may think that's extreme. Okay. Having power situated in the hands of a few, that should make you think about South Africa. Like, wasn't that the whole thing? Come on, we're not dealing with this. And what we're watching, when you set up these very restrictive voting laws, you are situating power in the hands of a few. The Republican Party itself is already situated power in the hands of a few, because there are far fewer people in the Republican Party than in the Democratic Party, and they are shaping this nation and holding us hostage. 410-319-8888. Gerard's on the phone from East Baltimore. Gerard, how are you?
How you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
There's always a bunch of confusing stuff being said on this radio. You know, it's just hard to understand what y'all are saying. 1 minute y'all saying this, 1 minute y'all saying this, that, and third.
You mean I'm sorry, let me be clear. The radio station as a whole or my show? Because my show is pretty consistent on our
station. I call you every day, and we get to arguing every day. I don't even get out what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, so every day you say things that are a little bit... Go ahead and finish, Gerard. Please, finish.
Yeah, you're always putting a bunch of misinformation
out. Are you going to speak? You can give your comment, sir.
Oh, can I finish?
Yes, go. That's what I'm telling you. Now, don't argue with me. Give your comment.
I'm trying to. I'm trying to tell you that every day, really, it's like you going against the people. I don't know what the people... Who the people is that you're talking with? Who will agree with you? Because, I don't. I don't never agree with you. What you said, like right now today, what you said, I don't agree with you.
You don't agree about the voter suppression laws in Georgia that passed? You don't agree that the law is going to Texas? You don't agree that there are far fewer people in the Republican Party than the Democratic Party? You don't agree with that?
You know what they're going to do, though.
Yeah, but
because you keep on saying what they're going to do, like you know for sure. Like you're
Those are actually, there are far fewer people in the Republican Party. The new law in Georgia is restrictive around voting. They are putting forth a platform in Texas. Like I'm saying, these are all facts. Like this is what it looks like. When you have power situated over the majority in the hands of a few and it restricts what they can do, it is part of the apartheid system. I'm not sure what part of that you have a problem with. We can argue about opinion, but I just laid out the facts here. All right, so Gerard hung up. Look, y'all. The law in Georgia, it is a restrictive voting law. Gerard is saying that is not correct. Okay, so let's be very clear about what is happening. The MLB moved the All-Star Game there's an estimated $100 million in state revenue that are going with this. Democrats like Stacey Abrams and Georgia Senator Raphael Warnock are now trying to work with major corporations, urging businesses and athletes and entertainers to stay and fight. And Abrams is saying, don't leave because it creates economic havoc for the state's voters. But here's the problem. In an impressive display of hubris, and the state's Republican Governor Brian Kemp argued Saturday at a news conference that Democratic criticism of the voting law had cost hardworking Georgians a paycheck. Now, what is interesting is that it was Governor Kemp that pushed this restrictive law through. Hey, here's what we're dealing with. We don't want regular Georgians to be impacted, but what do you want us to do? It's a restrictive voting law, and they're asking people to step up and push back with your dollars. They call for a boycott of Major League Baseball, Coca-Cola, Delta, JP Morgan Chase, Viacom, Citigroup, Cisco, UPS, and Merck. And they said, look, we need to do something. That was where we were first talking. Those companies then turned around and stepped up and said, look, this is not going to work. It is not fair. All the companies I said stepped up to the plate. And so instead of those who were saying get rid of the voter restrictive laws, they're now saying support these companies because these companies have stepped up to the plate. And what you see on the other side, Trump is releasing statements now against all those companies. Here's what he said. Trump said, don't go back to their products until they relent. We can play the game better than them. He's saying, you know what? At this point, we're going to fight hard to keep these restrictive voting laws in place, and then we're going to take them across the rest of the South. Texas is next. Georgia's ground zero. We either stop it here or we're going to have a hard time stopping it. Leo Burrows is on the line. Leo, how are you?
Whitehead, I'm wonderful, and I want you to know that
myself and many others fully support you.
Thank you. I'm trying to figure out what I was told. I'm giving my opinion. This is it's the facts, Leo. Come on.
We love you and we support you. And I'm just going to repeat what you've heard me say before. By any means necessary and prayerfully, as a warrior for justice, I believe that we have to protect and defend our women, our children, our families, our community, our churches, and our community organizations, black and brown people in this country. Yes, we are under attack. In terms of voting, we're under attack psychologically, physically. Chauvin killed this man. Chauvin tortured Floyd, George Floyd. He killed him systematically. That's systematic criminal torture. And there are others who will do the same thing if we don't protect ourselves through boycotting, prayer, counseling, and warfare when and if necessary. And I know you don't agree with that, but I'll tell you, I believe that there are situations where we have to defend ourselves, we have to give a good account of ourselves, and we have to leave the body bags for our enemies.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate. It's sad, but the reality is they're coming for us. As one of your previous callers said, there are people who are coming for us. And if we're not prepared to defend ourselves on a physical basis, prayerfully, then we're dead on arrival. And that's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's interesting. Let me ask you this, Leo, before you go. That when we start talking about protest in this case, that this is a moment, Leo, that I think people are going to have to step up and talk about what side they're going to be on. They're going to have to step up. This is starting in Georgia, but it's going to continue. It's not going to stop.
I saw Governor Kemp with several black people standing behind him at his press conference. Did you not?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got some black folks he's going to use as puppets, and we've got puppets in Baltimore and everywhere else. I think the vast majority of black people will stand together, but we've got to understand that this threat, prayerfully, is not just about poetry. The pen is mightier than the sword, but there are times when you have to use the sword to protect yourself. And if you're unafraid to stand in that regard, whether you believe in Nat Turner or not, or the futility of fighting back, I don't believe it's futile. I believe I would be a less than a man. I believe I'm a coward if I don't stand up and defend myself in a physical confrontation when I know I'm right and God is on my side.
I know that's right. Thank you so much, Leo. Folks, at this point, we're going to have to think about where we stand on this issue. I think that people see it as, well, it's happening in Georgia. It has nothing to do with us. I'm here to tell you it does. It has everything to do with what is happening with us. There is a war going on in this country, and voting is at the heart of it. When you take away a person's right to vote, when you take away their access to the ballot, you are cutting them off at the knees. It was Malcolm X. Y'all, people like to quote Malcolm X, and you're not willing to do what he said. He said, the ballot or the bullet, period. Dr. King said, give us the vote. Give us the vote. What we're watching in Georgia, which is ground zero right now, if we don't stop it there and we don't stop the Republicans from implementing these restrictive voting laws, it's going to go across the board. 410-319-8888. Anthony's on the phone from Columbia. Anthony, how are you?
Oh, Dr. K, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I'm glad Gerard hung up because he wasn't connecting the dots here, Dr. K. But I tell you, if we forget history, we repeat it. We have got to realize those 365 days of that Montgomery bus boycott should mean everything to us. People were watching TV, black and white TV. Some folks didn't have TVs. Some folks didn't have all the the modern things that we have today, but we have got to really, really look back at the history that those civil rights people banded together, and they said, you know, like Doc, one of Malcolm X's, by any means necessary.
Yes.
You know, and understand, Home Depot is headquartered in Georgia, but there's a Lowe's. Look at Coca-Cola. It's got 3,500 products, 200 brands. But look at them and find the alternative. Thank you, Dr. K.
No, I'm so glad. Thank you so much, folks. I'm just throwing it out here, and I know that it feels frustrating. I know. And there's a bit of a pushback right now, right? There's a bit of a pushback. If we're talking about really moving forward, there is a dilemma right now. And Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms summed up the dilemma now facing Democrats as they grapple with the power of corporate pressure to try to prevent measures like Georgia's from proliferating in other states. In other words, if you give in Georgia, right, if we say, you know what, we got to give on this one, this is going to be hard, it sets a horrible example for the rest of the country. That's what's going to happen. I'm not in any way, I want to be very clear, I take no pleasure in this at all. Why? Because there are going to be a lot of Georgians who are going to be financially impacted. I take no pleasure in this at all. So what are we willing to do? So if we won't boycott economically, what are we going to do? Like, what exactly are we going to do? Former President Barack Obama expressed his view that the move would advance the greater cause of fighting for voting rights in the long run. Barack Obama said, look, y'all, I'm going to put in plain language. It's going to hurt now so it doesn't hurt more later. That's really what the deal is. On Twitter, former President Barack Obama actually congratulated the MLB for taking a stand on behalf of voting rights for all citizens by moving the All-Star game out of Atlanta. It's going to hurt now a little bit so it doesn't hurt more later. It's going to cost about $100 million. But if we don't stop the Republicans here, this is ground zero. If we don't stop them here, Texas is next. That's where they're going. They already said that. And at this point, there are over 300 of these laws making their way through state houses. Donna's on the phone from Baltimore. Donna, how are you?
How are you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I had a concern about that gentleman who called a couple back who said he just didn't understand where you were coming and, you know,
yeah.
You always seem, you know, we have people, we call people like him obstructionists. They
yeah.
obstruct any progress, anything that could progress anybody, whether they're white, black, or whatever. They come in, you have a good plan, you know the plan is going to help the people, and you've got these obstructionists that come in and dismantle or try to sabotage anything that's trying to make a stand about, you know, democracy or equity or anything. And, you know, whatever's wrong with him, you know, he either got upset about it, he has anxiety issues, something. But he's distressed about what you're saying, and then it becomes confusing to him. But what you're saying happened during slavery. It happened to us in Jim Crow, which mm-hmm. was stressful for all of us. They used the white supremacists during Jim Crow and slavery used these same people to keep us oppressed, to lynch us, to burn us at the stake, to castrate our black men, to behead our people. These same people are doing the same thing, but they're doing it in a different way. And what they're doing is they're doing it in the ballot box. They're trying to change the laws to continue to oppress us. It's the same thing as what happened to us on slavery and Jim Crow.
Right.
Jim Crow. So we have to continue to fight because the white supremacists know that the only group, and I remember hearing Dr. Francis Welsing say this, the only group that can save the world from white supremacy are black Americans in this country because we are the only group that has suffered the most of 400 years of oppression in this country. And she was right. And I, every time I, when I hear her words, when I went to her seminar, I said, she has been right. And if she was still living, she would have been saying the same thing. We're the only group, because we're the only group that's lived and survived the longest and been uneducated under a system of white supremacy. My final point is that and I've been saying this, and I've been boycotting for years. I am very strict on how I spend my money, because I saw them using us. We became more and more, as a people and as a society, became more and more materialistic, to the point where you hear people say, I can't live without this. I said, no, you can't live without water and food. You can live without these material things. Until we start putting aside those material things and suffer just a little bit to make a point in hurting the people who are becoming trillionaires, because now it's only like, what, 43?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's
billionaires and trillionaires, and everybody else is being oppressed, including white people. We got a problem in this country. And that gentleman who called, he has some stressor issues.
Now, I got to stop you there, Donna. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm going to go to Shelley for a new call from Maryland. Shelley, how are you? Hello, Shelley. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. I'll be honest. I'm new to your station.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Well, this is Dr. K, and you're live on the air with me.
Oh, okay. Well, my sister was listening to you, and I heard you in the background. And I heard, you know, the conversation, like, the concern is, like, the new Georgia voting laws.
Yes.
Okay. I Googled, and I see, you know, like, one of them says it shrinks the window for voters to request mail ballots. you know, and I'm looking at, I'm trying to find out what the, you know, where, because I don't really see a lot of problems. It says the counties and the state.
So Shelley, it impacts let me explain. One, it impacts how long they're going to keep the ballot places open. For a number of people in Georgia, particularly African-American communities who work every day, they don't want to keep the voting booths open past the end of the closing day, which means they won't be able to go and vote unless they take off a day without pay. And
okay,
that may
so
not
I got
seem like
question.
A lot. That's actually a big thing. The second thing is they're asking for a driver's ID in order to get registered. And actually, throughout Georgia, particularly in predominantly black, economically challenged communities, they don't drive, so they don't have a driver's license. Third, they're restricting being able to vote by mail, which for a number of predominantly black, economically challenged communities in Georgia, they voted with a higher number by mail, so they want to cut that out where they physically have to get to the ballot boxes. For many of them, they don't have a car. They've done, in terms of redrawing the district line, so it's going to be harder to even get to a place to vote. And even just the idea of not allowing water and food. People talk about that. That was more punitive because a number of folks who were standing, some for standing for 4 and 5 hours, they were giving them water and food, and they were upset that it was Democrats passing out water and food, and so that was really a punitive part of it. It was the other three that are more important, and it deals with being able to financially afford a driver's license, being able to actually get to a voting place. Sometimes you cannot do that, so you can't vote by mail, and then having to take off work without pay. And for a number of people, the idea of not being able to get paid is a lot more serious than someone who may
be middle class. I got a quick question for you. So, like, Warnock and I forgot the other person's name, like, they're Democrats and they just won, right?
Warnock, yes, but do you understand the actual amount of work that it took to get there? Everything I just said.
No. Listen, I follow. That's why I called in. Only reason is I follow politics, you know, a little bit. But, you know, they won, and I think the black and the brown communities helped them win.
Yeah.
And, you know, this, I think, because what I'm looking at, and I hear what you're saying, and I totally get where this couldn't, you know, it could, you know, hurt them a little bit.
Not a little bit, a lot.
But the thing about it, there was a lot of fraud claims. You know what I mean? There was a lot of, you know, false ballots and dead people asking for, you know, ballots and things like that. You know, this, I thought, it looks to me that they're trying to prevent some of the issues we had with the last election.
But you understand that in preventing, Shelley, and I'm glad you raised up, in preventing, what they're actually doing is they are working to cut out almost a third of the population being able to get access to the ballot. The third of the population that actually helped Warnock and Ossoff get elected. I mean, they're setting things up for 2022 and 2024. Now, you know what, Shelley, I got to stop you there. We're on a heartbreak. But here's what I want to recommend to you, because it's like you have a lot of questions, a lot of very, very good questions. I just want to recommend, if you just go right over here to CNN, there's a good article, as restrictive voting bills multiply, GOP signals it won't bow to corporate pressure. You want to go to that, you can go to Vox. Vox has a whole piece out. You can go to that. You can go over to C-SPAN, Shelley. They have a whole piece there. Like, if you just do that, and if you really want to get down to the root, go to The Root, because they're writing about it as well. There's a lot of information out there, Shelley, that will help you kind of, you know, work through this and talk through this and figure it out. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Wyatt. Meet me back tomorrow. And, you know, bring your articles. I'll bring mine. And let's just talk about it tomorrow at 3:00.